So everybody, please welcome our speaker, Liat. She will now share her experience for 20 minutes on step three, I am like the actor, which is on page 60. And here's Liat.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, thank you everyone. It's always a huge privilege to share on any BBA meeting because I think I'd be dead if not for BBA. And this is also an exciting first because I normally share on food, and I'm going to today share on chaos creating and codependency and Al-Anon and all the people stuff. Because for me, this the whole process turns out is people stuff, but this section, I try to live by self-propulsion. That to me is, it's always been about my issues with other people. And when I was going through for the food, it was wrapped up in the food because the food was that rocket fuel that propelled me and kept me from getting feedback, or so I thought. And kind of, you know, I would kind of knock up against the food, and that really felt like the problem. But then the food went down and I still read this and I still related to it. And I've come to see that as really good news because there's so much more work to do. And this is just, like, I love doing this work. But I'll start just by reading. As Jeff mentioned, it's on page 60. Being convinced I was at step three, which is to say that I decided to turn my will and my life over to God as I understood God. Just what do I mean by that? And just what do I do? Well, the first requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Okay, I agree. You got me. I'm there. On that basis, I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. Oh, and this is where I just fall in love with the big book again, because no one else will admit that to me. And I wondered why. Why would nobody engage with me in a conversation about how chaotic and just what a colossal car crash my life felt like every day and sometimes looks like? And I'll ad lib a bit. I mean, I may go back and actually read directly from here, but I can say that I can look back on my experience of my life, and I like to kind of joke, it's true, but it's funny that I probably was born a compulsive overeater because I think my mom ate all my favorite allergic foods while I was growing inside of her. And so I say, you know, I was born a compulsive overeater, but I think that I was also born with like a sense of a hole in my soul and a need to protect myself, or fear that I needed to protect myself from other people. And I was thinking about what I wanted to say tonight, and I just remembered some things similarly to when I can think in when I'm working BBA for food. I have all these kind of, you know, signs that I probably might have noticed younger if I had my eyes wide open. And one really sprung to mind with this particular section of the big book, which is I think I was like 12, and I said to my mom, it's so hard because I don't know who I am. I just know that every single person I'm friends with thinks that I'm someone different. And my mom said, that's amazing. she thought it was really cool that I could be a different person with each friend. Well, it's not cool. It's just that I am like the actor, Or as a wonderful fellow on this meeting said when we just started, he said, I am the actor. With every person, I was the actor. And then, I got into costume design, riffing on this theme in college. My first year, I showed up to college and I was like, this is a really liberal school. So I'm going to show up really alternative, really almost weird, edgy. And it was weird. It really was. And like, it did feel sort of authentic as part of me. And yet I wasn't getting the response that I wanted. And life kind of wasn't going my way. People weren't doing what I wanted them to do, as one can expect. And the next year I turned up and I was wearing completely different clothing. Suddenly I was very like prim and proper. And I was wearing, for those of you who know the reference, I was wearing like Lily Pulitzer and all like totally, if you put these two actual people in a room, they would hate each other or fear each, like these are not things that mix. And so I actually had a professor say to me, you've come back a totally different person. I don't even recognize you. You look so normal now. And I just thought that was really interesting that now she thinks I'm normal because I'm wearing, sort of more standard clothes for New England, maybe. I don't know. But she seemed convinced, right? And so I thought that was a good sign. And ultimately, it gets to be really tricky because it doesn't work out that way. I show up to, a graduate school program or to a job or to a relationship, and I have an outfit on and I have a script for myself. And I think if I just follow that script, then the people that I want to like and approve of me, they will. And they kind of, what's tricky about this dynamic is that they fall for it at the beginning because I can keep it up for a sec on my own self-will. And I kind of let my guard down a little bit. Maybe this person really does like me. Maybe they can be my higher power. Maybe their approval of me means I'm okay now. And I relax a little and I start to show them who I really am, which is of course none of that stuff. And then things go a little wonky. They always went a little bit wonky. And interestingly, most recently I was listening to, I was obsessively following this court case in America. It was a woman who from a very young age convinced a lot of very powerful men that she could make something kind of magical happen. And she captured the attention and let me tell you, the finances of the world to some degree. And then it turned out that it was like spit and shoe polish and she made it up. Plessy Temple. And there was an article in the New York Times recently about the various outfits that women, famous women, have worn to court. And they gave an example. I hope it's okay to say these names out loud, but it's just evocative. So when Winona Ryder was on trial for theft, she wore like this very like sort of schoolgirl outfit, like I'm so innocent, I would never do this kind of a thing. Or a rapper who I don't remember her name, but she's magnificent. She was arrested for something very sort of like street, very like, it was some kind of fight in the streets in some place in New York. And so she arrives in this glorious haute couture outfit. Like, I would never get involved in anything like that. Are you kidding? I'm so above all of that. She had like someone holding her, like parts of her clothing behind her. And in this case, this woman who used to be known for wearing severe black turtlenecks, her eyes are open so wide, you think she may have a problem. And tons of makeup, like dramatic makeup. She shows up to court and she's wearing this like lovely baby blue suit and her hair is in really soft curls. And I just thought, I am all those women. And I've been all those women, And I started to think back to, by the way, she lost. All the end of the story is all of these women lost their court cases. And I was like, thank God, right? That's where God comes in. And God's like, first of all, chill, you know, relax. It's exhausting trying to put this self, quote unquote, self together. You know, it's exhausting trying to act all the time. There are people who get paid to do this, right? There are people who are professional actors. So leave it to them, you know, but it's also this relief that it doesn't work. It's not worth it. And it made me think back to when I used to show up to BBA meetings when I was in the food or anything. I mean, life in general, but BBA is supposed to be this place where I can really be myself. You know, I'm coming to meet God in BBA, and God loves me unconditionally. So who cares, right? And I would show up one of two ways. And it's true, I still have all these clothes in my closet. I was either wearing like my really grungy outfits, you know, like late 90s, early 2000s, like alternative post-punk emo, you know, got my nose pierced when I first came into OA because I was like, this is the most authentic version of me. And then I'm like, no, but actually, I love horses. And I'm like, I'm a total geek, you know, like maybe I am a bit more this like, you know, button down shirts and patches on my sleeves, you know, like maybe I'm just a bit more that way. And the reality is that like, no one cares. It doesn't matter. And I'm hurting myself. And the pinnacle of this, incidentally, was like, what time is it? Just under 2 hours ago, I don't know if that math is good, I met with my supervisor for my graduate school program. And I have, okay, so the real, you know, let's get real here. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. That's actually good news when it doesn't come off very well. When it goes well and it's based on a lie, that's when you're in trouble, right? And so this is a really good example of that. I lied my way into a graduate school program, or I was telling the truth, but I do not have the self-confidence to back it up. I don't know which is the answer yet, to be honest with you. We'll find out if I graduate. But by some miracle, and it probably was God, because I couldn't have made this happen, I found myself in a position where my supervisor in my program is quite serious. You know, he's the top. Yeah, he's like this guy, right? Which is, I have an allergy to that. I have an allergy to people who have achieved something, you know, because I think, well, you are really the higher power. You're the highest power. And if you think I'm good, you know, this is kind of, I'm going to go on a sidetrack for a second, say as I'm going through the chaos creating work, my sponsor's encouraging me to read the Coda literature, which I sometimes find helpful. No offense, Coda. No, it's really good. I love Coda. I really love Coda. It's great. Sometimes I find it hard to read. Anyway, so there's this one thing I read in Coda that was magnificent. It was a person who said that in her meeting room, there are glass dolls on a shelf and they're all beautiful and unusual. And one day she realized that she was that doll, that she had made herself look exactly like who she wanted to be picked by, wanted her to look, so that someone would take her off the shelf and animate her and give her a life, you know, put her in that position. And I was like, damn, that's what I've been doing my whole life. You know, I am this actor. I've been going around acting everywhere I go. I've been trying to like tempt and persuade and manipulate and suggest, control, fix everything to be exactly what I need it to be. And I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, you know, it doesn't come off very well. And so I lied my way or blagged my way into this program. And that was in 2019. And my first project fell apart, partly because of COVID, but like large part because of me. And then my second project fell apart. And when my second project fell apart, you know what? I just had to hold my hand up and say, that one was my fault, guys. And much credit to my program, they said, that's okay. This happens to a lot of PhD students, you know? And so that shame that I tend to feel as an addict, they were like, thank you very much. 5 minutes. Thanks, Jeff. They're like, yeah, cool. That's fine. You know, let's just move forward, which was generous and wonderful and a God moment. I thanked my higher power in that moment. And then 2 months passed without me doing anything. Still, because I'm still petrified. And I had a meeting tonight. My first meeting with my supervisor since that day. And I've been talking about it every time I meet with my sponsor in chaos creation, because this is chaos. This anxiety and fear and the burden of like, I have this thing I have to do. You know when you have a thing you have to do and you don't do it and you're like, I have to do it. That, but over a 3-year period, it's like, it's horrible. And so thank God I brought it to this work. And what she said was, you need help. You need to actually ask for help. You know, you need to be courageous enough to say, I can't do this by myself. And all that, you know, if I'm talking to other chaos creators, controller fixers, this is a big pattern of like, no, I'll do it myself. It's fine. You know, it's fine. I'll do it myself. I want to be in control. I want to do it. I don't need you. I'm not needy. It's fine. Right. Okay. So I come to this meeting and I realize that the first thing I didn't do, but have done historically, is get dressed up. Did not put on a full professional looking outfit because I'm not a professional person. So that was a misrepresentation, right? I didn't pull on full makeup because I never wear makeup. Why would I put it on for this one meeting? And I just thought, when I'm doing my step 11 at the end of the night, like, am I going to have to like slot in taking my makeup off? That God's not going to let me get away with that, you know? So let's just not wear makeup. And then the really important part came. Am I going to pretend I know what I'm talking about? And that was the scariest part, because in any situation, even with friends, it's really hard for me not to pretend that I know what I'm talking about. And I know what you're talking about. And I know everything because, guys, I want to run the whole show. And so I go to this meeting tonight and, I said, I don't know, a lot. And finally, he said, what about fill in the blank person who used to be my supervisor? And I said, he said that he's not my supervisor like 6 months ago because I changed my project. And my supervisor now, this like very serious dude, you know, I just feel awkward saying that he's like really successful and he's my supervisor. It makes me feel uncomfortable, but that's what the truth is. Very little time, you know, beyond my wildest dreams, I would not have thought that he had time to meet with me. And he said, well, then I'm your primary supervisor and you need to meet with me bi-weekly. This is the butt of the joke. This is the butt of the 20 minutes. I had 1 minute left. I said, I could have pretended I knew what bi-weekly meant, but I don't. So I said, does that mean twice a week or every 2 weeks? And he said very kindly, every 2 weeks. And that was the end of the meeting. And now I'm going to get that support that my sponsor was encouraging me to ask for. And I'm just learning, you know, from this program, I can show up, I can be myself, you know, and as I'm doing that, and as I'm reminding myself, like, it's okay, I'm safe, you know, my higher power's got me. I passed through this new and triumphant arch. And, you know, we come to this point at the end when we come to step 3 and it says, I'm just turning off my timer so it doesn't. It says, we thought well before taking this step. making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to God. And I said this before, I didn't do BBA perfectly the first time or the second time because I was in the food. And so I didn't think well about anything. And I didn't check if I was ready for anything. I just did stuff because other people wanted me to, right? And so this last time I went through abstinently, I thought, well, and this time that I'm going through for like a deeper and even more authentic version of myself, I'm going to think even more. And that's a miracle. That's only possible because of BBA, because BBA is a miracle. And I will leave it there. Thank you guys.
Thank you.